Who are we going to be to each other? Are we going to be the people that cast each other aside? Or are we going to be those people that find grace, faith, and hope to bring each other together?
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. And each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives, ultimately answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I'm sitting down with my good friend, Tyler Merritt. Woo, woo! You guys are in for a treat today. Tyler is the very first repeat guest from when Hope Still Wins was on IGTV. Like, remember that just a year ago? Well, he's back, and it's worth it. We're diving into, well, a really important topic, a topic that has encircled Tyler's life for a long time. He's one that just shares hope, who shares perspective, and shares a faith and a love that just is magnetizing. I think you're going to love hearing from him again. I know I did. Well, anyways, make sure you go check out his new book, I Take My Coffee Black, which releases today. Let's dive into it. It's time for my interview with Tyler Merritt. Well, it's time. I just talked about at the beginning, it's time for me to bring on one of my friends, somebody I admire from a distance. We've kind of met during COVID and kept talking. He's up to a lot right now. I'm excited to share everything with you and share this, the heart of Tyler Merritt with you. Tyler, thank you for joining.
Yo, man, I'm so glad to be here. First, Ben, I got to say this so that everybody who's listening can hear, man. I have never got a chance to publicly thank you, but when I was diagnosed with cancer, when I got a cancer diagnosis at the beginning of December, right after I finished writing my book, man, you and Wells and Nick were a support for me, man. Like, I didn't really tell a whole lot of people. And since we're on a group text, I hit you up. And I don't think you really know what your simple words of encouragement meant to me during that time period, man. And I know to you, it may not have been that big of a deal. And you were just trying to, you know, fill out and make sure I was okay. But you need to understand, bro, like something about that time period and you stepping in to the gap to care about my situation, you are like forever on my list of people that I'm down for. If you ever get beat up by like a group of Black people, I will be there to defend you.
Oh, I don't even know how to respond to that. dude, I appreciate it. It's, you know, it's interesting, Tyler. And when you and I first spoke on Hope Still Wins, there was just a lot going on in the world. And there's like a lot of yelling, trying to like filter through. Everything was difficult, and you were recommended to me and said, hey, you need to talk to Tyler Merritt. So I talked to you, and then we jumped on Hope Still Wins live and started talking again. And when you were diagnosed with cancer, and I got the text saying that you're going in for surgery, even now I sit here and I'm like, this, and it almost makes me emotional. It's like, man, what a year. Like, not only were you an advocate already, way before anything started to become very public when it comes talking about racial justice. You were doing this way before that. But like, what a year. And what a, I'm just wondering, maybe as a friend, like what kind of weight have you been carrying?
You know, it was crazy, man, because it was such a rare diagnosis. It was a cancer called liposarcoma. And it snuck out of nowhere, right? And so I was already dealing with the weight of George Floyd and suddenly being pushed back into the spotlight because of my activism and the video Before You Call the Cops and the video playlist and all these things. And people coming to me wanting to me to be a voice, which I took up that mantle for. And that's not the job of every Black person in America, but I felt a place because of how I feel about people. And then I started writing my book, man. And I know we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but this book is like, bro, it's like super personal and like gets into some stuff that allows you to walk alongside of me in a super intimate and personal, almost people would even say in an embarrassing way. And so I was like deep, heavy into this thing. And when I finally finished writing it, I turned it into my publisher and kind of exhaled like, oh, God, you know, like, I'm glad I made it through it. And then right after I turned it in, I went into the hospital and like 3 days later was diagnosed with liposarcoma. And it was like, I want to say it was like December 13th. And they put me into operation like December 18th or so, like super quick. Because as you know, I had a 28-pound cancerous tumor in my abdomen. They ended up taking out a kidney and the tumor. And I'm fine now. So for anybody who's listening, they're like, so like, are you still in treatment? I'm good now. It was one of those cancers they can go in and pull it all out. All that to say, and I was actually talking to Nick about this, man. Ben, like, seriously, bro, there's a level of... something happens, man, when you are about to go into something that you don't know if you're going to come out of, right? Like, going into the surgery, I didn't know if I was going to make out of it. My doctors were very clear. They were super evasive and they couldn't promise me anything. And in that moment, after that year that I had in the midst of COVID and everything else, man, I just started asking all these questions to myself, like, what do I want my legacy? Like, what do I want people to remember me for? And that's where it ticked me, man. And then thank God I made it, came out. I'm good now. We're here. Me looking sexier than ever. If your people can't see this visually, then I apologize. 28
pounds lighter.
28 pounds lighter.
All right, let's dive in there then. The Tyler Merritt Project, you can look it up, Google it. It's on YouTube. I personally spent a bunch of time, probably, I don't know, 10 months ago, watching these videos. I just recommend it to anybody. Like, my buddy asked me today who I was talking to, and I told him you, and he goes, okay, who's Tyler Merritt? And I said, this is how I'd explain Tyler. He's somebody who allows others and does a really good job at it. Like, I know you allow it, but you also, for lack of a better word, create and produce really well. Like, it's easy to watch. You're not just watching somebody's home video, but you allow us to walk through your story. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was you being a Black man, me being white, all this going on in the world. What I was allowed to do by watching your videos was to connect with you and say, okay, I get it now. Like, I get pieces. Like, I can hear your story and relate with you because it's not yelling. It's not trying to bring me down. I'm able to hear your story and relate with you. Okay, so for all that being said, I want to ask you now, when you're in the midst of this last year, and you finally have to ask yourself in a real way, this is what I want my legacy to be. What is it that came to mind? And does the work that you're doing before this and the book that you just finished right before you're diagnosed, does it fit into that?
That's a good question. You're good at this, Ben. You've gotten a lot better. You used to suck at this. here's a really simple answer, and then I'll kind of delve into it a little bit deeper. When I went into surgery, so I had my oncologist, right, who was this little Asian guy who was from Australia. So he was little tiny Asian guy, 100 pounds with an Australian accent. He was awesome. And then my urologist, who I had to have, because they said this to me, bro. They said, we're going to have a urologist in the room because if we get in there, we start cutting things. You might have to be on a bag for the rest of your life. So we want to make sure someone's there. I was like, gosh, this is horrible. And I didn't cry once up until this moment where I met the urologist the day before my surgery. And I said, my mom was in the room with the three of us. And I said to him, gosh, I'm getting emotional now, like I was getting emotional earlier. I said to him, yo, man, You don't know who I am, but I still have a lot of stuff to do. I still have a lot of world to change. So I'm going to need you to get me out of this alive. And he looked at me, grabbed my hand, and said, I'm going to do my best. And interesting story about him is he went home that night. This white doctor friend of mine went home that night, watched all of my videos, showed up the next morning before my surgery, and said, you're right. You got a lot of work to do. And that day before I went to the surgery, right before actually I went to surgery, I started thinking to myself, if I never got out of this, what would I want people to remember about me? And it's this simple. I don't want you, Ben, to say Tyler's really funny. I don't want you to say, man, Tyler's videos really compelled me. I don't want you to say he was a really cool guy. What I want you to say is Tyler loved me. I remember Tyler because of how he loved people. I remember him because when the world was going crazy and everybody was trying to figure out what direction we were going in, I met Tyler and I felt like I met somebody who loved me. Therefore, his love for me created empathy. Therefore, his love for me created a place that he wanted to grant me understanding to who he is and what he's about. His love for me compelled me to want to be closer to him for different reasons. His love for me, that when he found out he had cancer, it wasn't just, oh no, someone else is sick, but he loved me. And that's the only thing I want, man. You know, I think we have to jump into just faith for a second, because in my book is called I Take My Coffee Black, Reflections on Tupac, Musical Theater, Faith, and Being Black in America. I talk a lot about faith. And I think it's really, 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 really easy for people to confuse who Jesus is. And when people come to me and go, dude, how in a world where the word Christianity is synonymous with the word racism, how can you follow this Jesus? And I talk about how I followed Jesus because I felt in love with him and I figured out that he loved me. The Jesus I know is about love. And God forbid, may I be anything else in the world but love to people. Now, let me get really straight. Let me be very clear. If you know me really well and you get to know me, I cuss a lot. I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes trying not to cuss on this podcast, because that's every other word that comes out. But I have a love. I love me some people. And my hope is that when all this is over, people will say that Tyler loved me.
It's a good place to start. Again, Tyler just mentioned his book, which we're going to plug a bunch here. I Take My Coffee Black. It's coming out today, actually. And it's an incredible work. Now, jumping off of this idea of love, a lot of people out there listening will say, okay, I want the same thing. I want people to remember me as somebody that loved well. But can we break down what that even means for a second? Can we break down the why to that question? Well, like, why in the world does that matter to you? Like, if that's your legacy, man, if that's a thing that you're saying you want to be remembered for, why?
Okay, so I'll tell you something that's really surprising about this book. I didn't need to write it, right? Like, I wasn't sitting around going, I need to write a book. The opportunity came towards me and I already had concept, everything. I knew exactly what I wanted to put and exactly how I wanted to go about it. In fact, when my agent first came to me, I thought they just wanted me to write just a Christian book, just a book about God. And I was like, I ain't the one. I am not the one. If you're looking for like, a book about how to, or how to fix you, or how to be a spiritual, whatever, I ain't the one. But if you want something really honest, I'm your guy, right? So here's what is in this book. There is, and I'm getting to your answer here. What is in this book is a ton of information about being a Black person in America. And I sneak in history lessons in a really sneaky kind of way. In this book, man, I talk about Black people, what they've been through, where they're going, and so many deep stories on history, right? But then I talk about musical theater. I talk about rap music. I talk about all these things. But something I talk about more than anything, and this is the part that has surprised people and are like, what is going on? Is I talk about my flaws. And I talk about how messed up I am. And not in like a way of like, not in like a canned kind of way. But like I talk about my flaws in a very intimate, almost embarrassing way, because I talk about my sin. I talk about my shortcomings. I talk about my incredibly jacked up relationship with women. Talk about how bad I've treated people. The reason why I do that is not because I went, I just want to have this tell-all and express what's going on. I was trying to express to people that I need grace as much as the person next to me. Like, I am effed up. And if I, as a jacked up individual who does not deserve any love from anybody, can find my way and make it past some of the craziest things in the world, if I can get past all that and still come to a place where I find that I'm loved and accepted by my friends, by my circle, then you can have that too. And so when we break down the idea of one of being remembered for love, I don't care who you are, Ben. I don't care if you're white, black. I don't care who you are. What I do know is that there's probably an echo, there's probably a similarity in the both of us, in that there are moments that we don't always find ourselves as the best people and not deserving of love. I want to be that individual, and I have met so many other individuals in the world that want to be that person that says you deserve to have it. Now, is it going to be easy? No, which is something else to talk about. Like, it's just difficult, man. We live in a world where people are horrible. We live in a world where people make super duper huge mistakes, whether they are aware they're making that mistake or not. But who are we? Who are we going to be to each other? Are we going to be the people that cast each other aside? Or are we going to be those people that find grace, peace, faith, and hope to bring each other together? And because I've received that in my life, bro, I feel commissioned to give that to anybody else that I cross paths with. And not in a way to feel like I'm forced to do it, but to do it in a way that you deserve it. And even if you don't deserve it, I'm going to try my best to give it to you.
So 2 weeks ago, I was sitting at a little gathering of pastors and authors. It was actually an incredible week, and those things always kind of freak me out, because I never know what I'm going to get myself into. And two things really stood out to me. The first talk of the weekend, I knew I was going to be down to learn, or at least to kind of put down my walls, because the first talk of the weekend was that music just isn't worship. Fighting injustice is worship. And the second talk of the weekend was that it was kind of the argument against, hey, like, the fluffy people saying, hey, just we just need to be really fluffy with our faith, like, love is the answer, all this stuff. And the talk was about how love is actually the hardest thing to do. It's not the fluffiest, it's not the lightest, it's actually the hardest. It's a lot easier to stand up on a platform and yell and judge and bring others down so that you feel greater. It's really hard to lay yourself down at the feet of others in love. And so I'm going to say right now, your legacy is going towards, I believe now, after 2 weeks of thinking through that thought, the hardest thing to do in this world, consistently love. Now, so if we could get a definition from you on what love is actually, and maybe how it plays out in our everyday lives, I think you'd be a great person to speak to that.
This is the part of love that I remember when I was really young, someone said to me, and I don't know if they were trying to be quick to quote the Bible, I don't know what they were saying, but they were basically saying, like, Tyler, God has a grace for you that you will never understand. And God, it's so funny, when you're young, you don't you don't understand what that really means, right? Because you haven't lived enough life to know what your failures are going to look like. But if I had to define love, I would attach the word love with unconditional. That's what makes love hard. The idea of being unconditional with your love. Look, that doesn't mean that you're going to let people run over you. That doesn't mean that you are just going to be, you know, somebody who, like you said, it's just a fluffy concept. That means that in the face of real, honest struggles, in the face of moments where maybe other people are telling you that someone else doesn't deserve or look at what they did, or someone has hurt you in a way that you don't feel like you can ever come back from. Unconditional means that you are going to choose to care for them despite all of that. Love to me is attached with unconditional. And I'll be honest with you, bro, I don't know if I'll ever completely understand that. And I think it's something that I will always go and shoot towards, you know, for the rest of my life. Let's put it this way. You know as well as I do, you've heard people say before, like, hey, don't give that homeless person any money because they're going to go and use it to buy drugs. Or don't go and give that homeless person money because you don't know what they're going to do with it. When it comes to unconditional love, what they're going to do with what you give them is not the point. What they're going to do with what you hand over to them is not the overall crux of the conversation. The conversation is are you going to continue to give out that thing that you have and you can so freely give with no expectations back, knowing that you may not get it in return, but because it has been so freely given to you, you will continue to give it out. Man, that stuff is hard. Really, really, really hard. But my life has forever been changed because I have friends that have decided they were going to love me through my nonsense. So I guess the simple answer is, man, is love is unconditional to me.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee.
Again, I'll go back to this gathering as a part of. They encouraged this gathering to stay curious and to ask questions, and you said a little bit ago that it feels like people are confused because it feels like today, as you call yourself a Christian, Christian is synonymous with racism. Do you really believe that? Are you really feeling that way? Because I think your voice matters in these moments. And if that's really how you're feeling and how people are responding to you, there's a lot that needs to be fixed. And I think that's going to really like shock people for you as a strong voice out there that's advocating and caring deeply and doing this with you, like you said, with the desire of love to make that statement. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Oh yeah, I will. And first I want to say this, just in case there's anybody who wants to shut down because of that statement. And you'll see in my book, I give a whole like segment of my like conversion experience. So I'm not a Christian hater. Like I consider myself a Christian. As small as I am, consider myself one. But in America, we've Americanized religion, we've Americanized Christianity in such a way that, and when I say we, let me be very, very clear. Oh man, this is about to get deep. Okay, so I'm going to use this as an example. I'm going to take the white church. And when I say white church, what I mean by the white church is a church that predominantly has mostly white people in it, white pastors, this, that, or the other. When, say, George Floyd was killed, we watched a man on camera be killed. We watched a person die on camera. So the next Sunday comes around and church happens all over the world, right? And in America, you had white churches, many of white churches, that begin to ask themselves, how do we address this? Like, do we talk about it? Do we bring it up? Because we have a lot of people here that are going to lean over to Blue Lives Matter and let's finish out what the whole story is. We have some people that are gonna be triggered if you say Black Lives Matter. You're gonna have people that are not gonna really understand why we're attempting to address this from the pulpit and that people should have their own recommendations and how they go about this and their own opinions and this, that, or the other. In the white church, then, those were the conversations that were being had. Now, let me take you over to the Black church. The Black church doesn't have a civil rights committee. The Black church doesn't have a group that specifically gets together and goes, so what day are we going to talk about people of color and what day are we going to talk about injustice? The Black church's civil rights committee is on Sunday morning, bro. The Black church's community of people that are looking after unity and looking after how do we move through things like the death of George Floyd, people are coming on Sunday mornings there because they want to hear faith, hope, and love to get past that. That's what's happening in the Black church. Not because it's just Black people, but there are a group of people in that environment who go, here's people that need hope right now and we're going to give it to them. Over on the white church side, and listen, I go to a church that's predominantly Caucasian, okay? So let me be clear that I'm not trying to be like pin one thing to the other. I'm just saying that I know that there were conversations even in the church that I went to with, how much is this going to cost us if we bring up these conversations? And so then you have a whole group of people to the far, far, far right who are just saying stupid stuff, right? And then using the name of Jesus to justify that. I don't think I'm saying anything crazy by mentioning that. There, you know, there are some people that feel that way. And then you have a lot of people that don't feel that way at all, and they're right there in the middle. But being silent in situations like this, you might as well be the enemy. So when I say Christianity is synonymous with racism, I'm not trying to say that to be like super, you know, like dramatic or hyperbolic about it. I'm saying if Christians are not taking an active stance towards bringing people of color together, if they're not taking an active stance towards social justice, which is a biblical concept, if Christians are not moving in a way of love, hope, and faith to bring people of all colors together, what do you call it?
So for those people who sat out there and heard you make that first statement and shut down, they felt themselves like this really shut down tangibly. They were like, I'm out, you know, but they stood on. They're still here. They're still listening because it's playing and they're driving. They can't turn it off. Why should those people hold on? Why should those people stay for this conversation? Why should those people not shut down and run?
I happen to be one of those individuals that I'm a firm believer of. I want you to stick around. I want you to be around. I don't typically open with, I think a lot of people think the word Christianity is associated with racism. Like, I don't, that's not my MO, right? But who I am and where I walk through in an everyday, you know, thing is that I get to see reconciliation happen on a daily basis. I get to see people who maybe didn't understand something on a Monday have an open heart surgery kind of conversation with somebody who's different from them. And then on Wednesday, they're going, okay, I get it now. I get to see people stand in the gap every single day to build something beautiful, great, and wonderful. I get messages all the time with people saying to me, hey, Tyler, I know this is a really weird question, but can you answer this for me? And I bring all that up to say, there are individuals who are out there right now that they are just questioning and asking, and they're so badly and deeply going, what can I do? How can I get better? And I'm talking about all people of all color. I'm not just saying it's white people. I'm talking about every, there are so many people out there right now that are just going, we just want to make the world a better place. And what steps can we do do that? I get to see people come together. I get to see people go from not understanding to understanding. I get people to sit in front of me and hear me say something like Christianity is synonymous with racism. I have a conversation about it and then go, oh, I see what you're trying to say. You're not saying Christ is racist. You're saying we live in a world right now where things are so mixed up that people don't even know what Jesus looks like. And because I get to see the reconciliation, I can also kind of attach to that truth.
You know, it's interesting. I wasn't going to ask this. And it might come off wrong. That's okay.
Sure.
You've stood in the gap here over the last year. You've been through a lot physically and with health wise, and then also processing all of this and dealing with people like me. And you've stood in the gap, which you didn't need to do, which wasn't necessarily a responsibility that you had to hold, but you have. And then you write this book. Again, for anybody out there listening, it's out now. Like today, I take my coffee black, Reflections on Tupac, Musical Theater, Faith, and Being Black in America. The foreword is by Jimmy Kimmel. You might know his name. Two questions. Why have you stood in the gap? And then what do you hope people take out of this book?
First, I think it's important to say that we should not expect for anybody to stand in the gap when it comes to racial explanations and this side or the other. There are a lot of Black people who are tired, do not want to be here, and we shouldn't be mad about it. And we shouldn't expect for every Black person in America to try to stand in the gap. And I just think that needs to be known. So, when Before You Call the Cops came out, and I talked about in the book, I had a lot of Black people that came to me and said, yo, you need to stop trying to humanize us to white people. And here's the truth. They weren't wrong. It is not my job to try to humanize myself to white people or to anybody. But I do believe this. Why do I stand in the gap? It goes back into what I said originally, Ben. Like, I'm so messed up, man. I've made so many mistakes in my life. I've treated people bad. I have disrespected people. I have lied to people. And despite all of that, I still have people in my life who give me grace and love me. They want to ask me questions. They allow me to ask them questions. They allow me to take steps on how to get better. And they have afforded me a grace that I did not deserve. This is my opportunity right now, bro, to like be that to some people, to be an ear, to be a voice of reconciliation, to try my best to explain some things that some people may not understand. And I did that with Tyler Merritt Project. I launched this with the idea of like bringing humor and laughter and all of this in a way that was super non-threatening. Not because I don't think we can't be angry Black people, because we can, but if I'm trying to get a 78-year-old white woman to understand why me making myself smaller to her is a problem, I may not want to rage at her like a lion to get to my point. And that's why I stood in the gap, man. And thank God I've been able to see some fruits of my, for lack of a better word, labor. Even with you and I, bro, like we didn't know each other. Well, gosh, maybe it has been a year now. You know, not too long ago, we met through Wells, but dude, like you're my dude. You're my boy. You know what I mean? Like if anybody even for a second is like, what's up with Ben Higgins? I'm like, that's my dude right there. because we've taken some time to get to know each other. And my standing in the gap has not only been good for you, but it has been wonderful for me. The second question, I think you asked about, what do I help people get out of the book? Is that it? To make a long story really, really short, I took a huge gamble with this book, man. I gambled that if you walk along somebody who is different than you, somebody in whom you don't know, and when you walk alongside them, they make themselves hugely, they're transparent with you, vulnerable, and they allow you to get as close to them as possible. Someone who's different than you, and they just lay all their stuff down before you, and you walk with them through all of that. I put a gamble and I put all my chips on the hope that after you've gone through that, you will find empathy, you will find love, and you will find desire to have a better relationship with your fellow man. And that's what I ended up doing in this book. And it's fun, dude, it's super funny. That's one of the reasons why Jimmy wrote the foreword. I was sending him chapters after every time I would write a chapter, and we would crack up together because there's so much humor in it. But there's also just so much real. And I'll say this, because I don't want to get too much away in the book, but you know, since I know a lot of people that listen to your podcast, man, in chapter seven is called, I was doing perfectly fine, then damn it, here comes Jesus. Like we go five chapters through where I don't really talk about God or anything, we're talking about all the stuff. And then I basically give my testimony in a chapter, like a legit, honest testimony. But Jimmy Kimmel still signed off on that. You follow me? Like somebody who we don't know is like a religious individual. And he signed off on it because I let you walk through me through with this book. And I walked through all everything and everything, highs and lows, the whole nine, embarrassing moments. I'm telling you, by the time you get to chapter 16, you are genuinely going to go, I cannot believe this dude wrote this in this book about himself. But because I let you in that close, by the time you get to the end, you're like, okay, I feel like I have this new person in my life that I know. And if I took the time to get to know people this way, maybe I would start to drop all of those preconceived notions. Maybe I would start to drop all those ideas that I have about people that I don't know. It's possible that if we really walk with each other in proximity, that we could change the world.
I think it's a good place to end it, because one of the ways that it feels like, as we summarize each podcast, from the people that are influential leaders that we bring on, yourself included, one of the themes that seems to always resonate is this cry from the soul, from the guest, to say to the listeners, you matter, you can make a difference, and it takes all of us. And it feels like you're saying the same thing. Tyler, I'm going to say one thing to you. Rest that voice, because there's a lot more of it that's going to be used in the future. Before we say goodbye, I ask every guest the same question. I've got to ask you, this is the second time you've answered this question, because this is the second time you've been on Hope Still Wins. Woo-hoo. You're the only repeating guest we've ever had.
What?
So I wonder if this has changed since the first time. But here's a question for you, Tyler. Do you believe Hope Still Wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Can I just ask you how many people say Hope Still Doesn't Win? Has anybody ever said Hope Doesn't Win?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
And I've said this, we've had some really interesting responses. We had somebody come on here and say they believe Hope Still Wins, but they also believe that for some it doesn't, because in order for hope to win, you have to have a past that can point you towards a better future. And if you don't have a past that points you in any direction that is healthy, then how can you dream of a better future? So, hey, I'm not one to argue with this response. That's interesting.
Wow.
I've had people come on and say that they believe hope still wins, but that's also, it's dirty, it's gritty, it's heavy, it's bloody, it takes sweat and it takes tears. And it takes a constant fight. So we think of hope as this beautiful thing that points us for the future, but it takes a grit and a determination now that we just don't understand. So I've had really unique answers. And I think that's the beauty of this question, that I thought at first was just a simple like yes or no.
Sure.
And that's why I added, if so, why? And if not, why not? Because I want you to explain, do you believe it or do you not?
No, I just think it's gangster for someone to be like, no, Hope doesn't win. Skip all y'all. Die, people. do I believe Hope still wins? 100%, man. I'm going to attach this to you just a little bit, all right? And I know everybody, hopefully everybody that's on this listening to this has picked up your book Alone in Plain Sight. But yo, bro, you are still here. And I'm still here. And though we look at that every day when we wake up in the morning as, you know, it's just another day, for all the crap that we have to go through every day, man, the death that we see, the struggles that we may have in our families, how we get to see our sister or literally our sisters or our brothers and struggle in their relationships, you know, divorces. Bro, we are still here. And one of the main reasons that we are still here is because people like you, Ben, have provided us with an environment to receive hope. As long as there is an environment to receive hope, as long as there is an environment to not only receive it, but see it and feel it. And I see that kind of hope when I look at my niece and nephew, Zoe and Declan, my niece, my nephew, Jordan. Like when I look and see my goddaughter, Gigi, like, man, anybody that says hope doesn't still win needs to take a look around.
You're the man. Well, I'll throw it right back at you. You're still here too. And you've offered this space through your book, through writing, through your videos. Make sure you check out the Tyler Merritt Project, but also I Take My Coffee Black. That'll be the last time I mention this on this podcast because I've mentioned it 7 times. And so if you don't know the name by now, you've been listening. Tyler Merritt, thank you for joining us in Hope Still Wins. You're the man.
I love you, bro.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. That's it for today, my friends. Thank you again for listening to Hope Still Wins. Make sure you pick up a copy of Tyler's new book, I Take My Coffee Black, anywhere books are sold. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and I'll see you next week.